Hello and welcome to the Dive presented by Honda. Thank you, Honda. Let's take a moment this time.
That's yeah, okay.
I'm preparing you. Ready for season 5, episode 30. We get a different take. Azalea's now 30. Back, so we're not yelling.
I'm getting excited.
30. Mark
this is big, okay? Oh my God. We're finally over the hill now. 30 years old. That's big.
We're all over 30.
Yeah.
Aren't all of us?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just turned 30 not that long ago.
I was in summer, yeah. It's June.
End of June. Okay. I guess that was a while ago then.
Me and Mark had the same birthday.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Every year, people remember and they're like, you guys have the same birthday all around the studio. And I'm like, yep, same as last year.
Honestly, it happens to me too. Yeah. I forget most of the year. And then in the like few days leading up to it, Travis is like, oh, what do you and Mark want to do? And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Isn't there some like weird statistic about birthdays? I remember being taught this, that it's like if you're in a class of 20 people, it's like,
yeah, it's like if there's 30 of you or something,
someone would have the same birthday.
Yeah.
Because I used to work on when I worked on Blizzard broadcasts, Zoe, who used to do WoW and Overwatch League, she had the same birthday as me. And then I'm thinking, you guys have the same birthday. So it's like statistically, every broadcast team, someone's going to have the same birthday. You guys
We're not special.
Right.
That's what he's trying to tell us. He's trying to
rain
turn
on my
us
parade.
Against each other. Break us apart, Mark.
How did it's you get that from that? I was trying to join in on your cool club.
Okay. Well, you know who's in the cool club now? Guess what? It's Danny. Yes. All-star, superstar, biggest play in LCS history, maybe. The first thing I came up, because people are always going to start to dig back, and a lot of people are saying the double lift, Lucian versus Cloud9 is a big contender. But regardless, focusing on Danny here, this was such an amazing, at the time, series-saving play.
Yeah.
For sure, game-saving play. A real 1v9 moment that is so rare in League of Legends nowadays. And they were down like 7,000 gold at the time. Like that sort of energy around a single player has I really been missing.
I just think that the sky is the limit for this guy. You know, he has shown like his ceiling is just insane, right? Like I can't remember someone coming into the league like this and having like two probably the most memorable two plays that we've had this whole year are Danny plays. The Aphelios one shot thing and then this are like two that are stuck in my mind. And maybe there was like that blabber kick in like spring. I'm thinking of one, but
yeah.
There's been some other really good plays, but like those are the two that just jump front to mind. And it's like a 17-year-old who skipped academy and is in the LCS. And like he's got so much room to improve because his laning is actually not that good, right? Like there's a clear area of improvement, but he's so insane at team fighting and such an aggressive player that he's really fun to watch, and he's legitimately one of the best AD carries in the league already.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's this obvious thing you can get way better at. If you get better at that too, oh my God, you're gonna be good.
Plus, it just feels so nice to have all our conversations during COVID about NA talent and building up just be like vindicated and then embossed and then have lights all over them. It's just like, this guy literally wasn't even in academy, straight from amateur.
I think that's what makes me the most excited about Danny in this play, is just because a lot of people might come into the scene, like no offense to Ablaze Olive, who was the other candidate for Rookie of the Year, but Ablaze Olive has been in the academy system for a long time. He played under Bjergsen for years. He's 20-something, and not like that's old, but just like
he's basically dead. He's over 20. Yeah.
His hands are falling off already.
I mean, we're in the grave as 30-plus.
So. I just mean like a true 17-year-old talent. Since Blabber, I don't think we've had one. And you know, we still think of Blabber as a young player because he is, but he's been around since 2017. I think, or maybe it was 2018 when he came into
he
the league.
He did Scouting Grounds, and then he was on
swapping
C9
time with Sven for a little bit before he was a starter.
For a while, and he's
but
spent some
at this
time.
Point, he's been playing in the LCS for 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
And so like, you know, to find another talent 3 or 4 years later, it does feel like a bit of a long time. That's why I'm so excited about him doing so well. And this play was actually so nuts because there were so many little things he did that, like, on first watch, I didn't pick up on. And second watch, when I saw them, I was like, holy crap. Like, the half jump that he did on the stasis onto Kai'Sa.
Yep, to stay in range.
And also, if he went too far, then the Kai'Sa can just kite back to the other.
I don't think that a lot of people would have done, like, full range.
I think
jump.
A lot of AD carries panic full jump.
to just get me out of there.
Get me away from the two people behind me.
Because he was also getting barrel chained. So he did a little mini hop, killed the barrel, then went back and killed
the
Kaisa.
And the Kaisa was invisible.
That, to me, was the thing I stuck out in reviewing it, was every like barrel kill and not killing off the minions because he didn't want explosive shot to explode the rest of them when he was life-stealing his way down mid. Yeah. That too. Like, those things I would totally forget about. The thing like, oh, I want to rocket jump on the person I'm trying to kill and have it shorter. I thought that one was a little bit more.
It was really impressive though. There was even like earlier in the play, you know, like he's autoing the champions. As soon as he can't auto the champions, he's like hitting minions to keep PD stacked and like lifesteal back up. Like he's doing so many good little things in the 1v2 when he's running away from GP as well as Ryze.
Dude, when he turns in that bush,
into the tower to dodge the barrel chain, take one shot from that, then jump in the bush, immediately turn when they're going to chase. Like then rocket jumping behind the minions so Ryze can't actually Q him through. The minions would have had to E again. Like there's just so many little things that were done so well.
Yeah.
And it's such an aggressive mindset. You know, like there was this isn't even like an attack, but I think it was the Dig series, like Neo, right? There was something that just like the juxtaposition really stood out to me and just like the mindset of the players. Where Dig had, I believe it was a 5v4 at Dragon, right? And the other team starts to engage in the 4v5, and he just jumps over the dragon wall from the pit, and then it's like a lost team fight because he can't even join anymore. And you know, Danny could have literally done the same thing here. He could have just jumped over the raptor wall, and his team would have gotten ace, and nothing would have happened. And it's like instead he's just charging in and playing it so aggressively and mechanically so well as well that it was really really impressive.
And as much as credit as this play gets, because it obviously deserves it, he actually played the rest of the series pretty well too. There was a play where I think he jumped in and assassinated Abadage near the Baron pit where he killed the Ryze, and that helps like slow the game down. And there were a lot of little plays that he individually made over the course of the series, especially on the Tristana to
the other Tristana base fight where he like flashes in on top of them and
he was actually hulking out the entire series.
The best part of it is that because everyone got so mad about them putting him on, Ziggs for game number five after he had that.
I hated it.
His Tristana record is still undefeated, though. I was like, you know what? They knew they were going to lose. They protected his record. He's still.
What if it would have been undefeated anyway? And then they'd be a world.
Yeah. What if you qualified for worlds instead, Kobe?
No. It was 5-head. Yeah. He was like, protect my Tristana. When
after that game, I actually couldn't believe that they didn't put it back on.
Yeah. Most people.
And the Ryze. Well, the Ryze was so big the whole goddamn series. It's finally up for Jizuke. And I'm like, they're going to give them both Tristana Ryze. And Ryze?
2-3 Thresh Ryze, I thought they were going to go. And I'm like, if they banned the Tristana, like, great.
I thought they were just going to do Tristana Ryze, man. When someone looks that good on a champion, I don't even care.
I am kind of down with that mindset a little bit.
But the thing is, they already had Aphelios. So, and Tristana into Aphelios is meh matchups.
Yeah, and that's also why, I mean, like, that's why I was thinking they take the Thresh as well, because the other team.
I kind of like that angle, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just take whatever AD carry is your best matchup.
Man, we just went full into review that series mode off of this one play, but it was so worth it.
Yeah.
Trying to bring it back to you, Danny, in that play, though, part of the reason I really, really enjoyed it is that the thing that you're bringing up where it's, you could escape. Like at that moment where you're like, you could just be like cheering, oh my God, he fought his way out. He went down mid, he's out of there. He can live.
Yeah.
But when you turn back in and you have that killer instinct and he 2v1s the two solo laners afterwards, that is what takes you from a great play to
one of the best
players that we have ever had. This will be cemented in LCS history type of play.
Yeah.
And those things are sparks that you very rarely see. That's what I love when I watch AD carries that really want to play on the edge. You get that feeling when you watch old double lift plays. And he's just, especially a lot of the Lucian ones where he's dodging in and out and being very aggressive with positioning. When AD carries, the glass cannons of League of Legends play aggressively and play with positioning that is risky for them, but has the high upside, high potential. I mean, those are the most heart-pumping situations because you have so much to lose.
I mean, you also need the mechanics to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, you watch a Ryze or Ryze maybe a little bit more mechanical, but like a Syndra, like hulking out, taking over the game. It's like, at some point you just press QER and you one-shot them and you're like, well, you're playing well, but it doesn't look as cool as this fed-ass Tristana, like, 1v9-ing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so impressive, like, I am so excited about this play. I want to do like a content piece specifically on it because there's so many little things that he did so well. I mean, early in the fight, he's auto attacking and playing that line so aggressively that
the
he forces
Nautilus
out the
buffer.
Buffer on the Nautilus hook. He actually forces out the Sterics as well as the stopwatch on GP himself earlier before killing them in the 1v2. If he hadn't played aggressively, GP wouldn't have died there. He would have died. He forced out the Sterics from the Viego before the Viego tried to actually flash in and kill him. He forced out the stopwatch, you know, as well as the ultimate when he stopwatched. So like he forced out so many things by playing aggressively and maximizing his damage early in the fight that it opened like this tiny window to like make magic happen. And it's just like, damn, that easily one of the coolest plays ever. I haven't put any thought into like, is this the best LCS play ever? But it's easily one of them. And this was one of like the coolest just League of Legends plays, period, I have seen in a competitive game. Yeah. Like this was like a fucking 1v5 Penta in an elimination game in playoffs.
While they're down 7,000 gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had the same thing in our story meet today. My first notepad idea that I put up there was we need slow-mo Tristana replay of Danny's play breaking down all these individual pieces.
I don't want
better have made it in.
I don't want to leak anything, but I'm going to leak something. As far as I know, we're planning on trying to get the comms from that game too, so we can hear what EG was saying while he's making that play in like a little mini mic check.
Also recording VO for a segment for it after this. I already planned it.
Yeah.
So, the day I watched that,
if you guys like hearing us talk about this play, get ready.
We all had this genius idea.
Everyone's excited about it, right? Like it was incredible. It was incredible, and I'm just so excited for Danny. And I like that. I do think it forces teams to take another hard look at like, what are they missing from amateur, and what are they missing from some of these players that aren't as well known, right? Like, is there really no talent to be had, or are you just not actually scouting the right things? Are you missing some of these players that are talented? Because I think we're seeing more and more examples of young players in the LCS that are really talented. You know, Tactical, Blabber, Insanity, Ablaze Olive, Danny, Neo, like lots of young players here that are proving incredibly, incredibly adept. Fudge obviously coming over from OCE, but like he was the youngest player in the league when he first started playing. Like there's so many young players now in the league that are actually some of the best players on their teams. And I like that it's going to force teams to hopefully do a better job scouting.
I think overall, when you look back at this year and a lot of how the rosters were put together, I'm glad people start to go more for like a, hey, we can't compete with the $5+ million rosters that are just import crazy. And, you know, like realistically, it's going to be really hard to make worlds over them or beat them in best of fives. And so you see people taking more of the Immortals, the Dignitas, the Golden Guardians approach. And I actually like seeing that because I don't want to watch an 8th place team full of veterans just lose.
Why didn't he say CLG? about that approach?
I'm going the Bambi approach. You know, anything good to say? I hope people keep doing that because I do think it also matters that you put them in a good situation. I mean, Golden Guardians at the start of the year looked like a disaster and people were not talking about Ablaze Olive in a positive light at all. And they stabilized enough of the roster around him to let him shine a little bit. So take chances on rookies, but also don't just throw them to the wolves.
Okay. Next topic in our review of this last weekend. Biggest one is this change in Team Liquid.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually filling my lungs with hopium, you know?
Deep breathe.
Hopium. It's killing me.
Why are we doing hopium if it kills us?
Breathe deep.
Because
it's worth it, Mark.
Because we're degenerates, Mark, and every year at Worlds, we believe we're going to win.
We have to have
only
a reason.
To be crushed.
We have to have a reason to live, Mark. And this is just such a good change that they've made. Core JJ taking into his own hands here as far as turbo roaming across the map. Mm-hmm. You saw inklings of this in the regular season already. When they first announced Alfari was going to be the go-to starter, he is not going to, you know, be sharing time or anything like that. First two games, they had multiple roams, way more than usual, from Core JJ, from jungle, from even mid lane from Jensen getting up there. And they took that and they really ran with it. So they expanded on not just focusing on topside, but also doing mid playthroughs. Santorin coming back and working with a lot of these timings with Core JJ has just been such a magnificent turnaround for this team. It completely changed my view of them.
I think the weirdest thing for me too is when you hear like Perma Roam playing more aggressive, all this stuff, you think that they would be snowballing really hard. And I know they did a little bit against C9 with, you know, sub 30 minute games, but against TSM, a lot of the games were actually close into the 20-minute mark where you saw the goal graph just kind of like this, and then they would actually make a better team play or better macro play or something like that. And it's just so impressive because it's not like they're crapping on their opponents. They're kind of picking them apart more, where they're in the situations to neutralize this heavy counter pick that was TSM's red side game plan around top side to try and stop Alfari. Well, Core JJ and the rest of the team actually just do a good job of making sure TSM can't snowball, and then they play better in the mid to late game. And it's not slow, because it's still a really different style than the like scale till 20 then team fight that we kind of saw more in the regular season. But it's just really cool to watch because it's not total troll Fiesta fighting.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the TSM one, that as an example, is there's so many decision points where you could have had it return to a more standard game format. You can play defensive. You can go for the defense, recall, reset, and try and defend. But they kept going for these dives. And each team was not backing down. And so each team is making, oh, we're going to 4v1 dive your top laner. Oh, we're 4v1 diving this side. And they just keep on upping the ante of aggressiveness. And that... It was another kind of refreshing moment of looking at something that is a bit different from what the norm is.
Yeah.
And I want to see how far that style can be pushed. And now that they're going to Worlds, we already know that they're going to be able to test it against the very best in the world as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really exciting. Like casting that game, sometimes you're casting a game and it's 0-0 and it feels like nothing's happened. You know, casting some of those games, it'd be like 0-0, 1-0, and it feels like it's been action-packed because there have been so many attempted plays that have been stopped by proper counterplay, right? And Santorin, I just thought it was like masterclass in jungling. It felt like he was so efficient. He was always there at the right timing to defend the dives on Alfari, to protect him so he could get waves. He was always there when they were on the offensive at the perfect timing, not actually sitting there for 20 seconds waiting for the wave to crash. He is walking through Tribrush towards the tower as the wave is crashing, having killed a camp right before and zoning Huni off the wave. And his timing was just perfect. Like, his pathing was just like savant. It was insane. I just thought like his timing was so good consistently throughout that whole series, and it really was the biggest difference to me was just how well Team Liquid played as a team, how well they moved as a squad, their timing on roams between Jensen, Court JJ, Santorin, and Alfari. Tactical was kind of just like in his own world doing his own thing farming, but it's like that four or some grouping of that four, you know, part of them were always together and always moving around the map, felt like.
While we're talking Santorin, I mentioned this on the desk, but this is going to be his fourth straight, potentially, if he wins against 100 Thieves, that would be his fourth straight finals. Small asterisks on the fact that he couldn't play because of migraines last split, but he had the two with FlyQuest.
He gets the credit for qualifying.
I think he gets the credit. I would say that's why I say three in a row already.
He also
already
played in semis, right?
Yeah, he played in semis, got his migraine, then they beat TSM with Armeo, and then they qualified. So like,
he gets the credit.
He gets the credit for being there. So three straight in a row is pretty impressive, considering you swapped teams during it. Where is Santorin on your Mount Rushmore of NA junglers?
He's right up there with Meteos and Xsmithy, I feel like. Pretty close to them. He's gaining ground quickly.
Where's Blabber? Is Blabber not on there?
Blabber's had way less history, you know, way less successes. Because as much as you're saying, oh, he's been around for a while, he actually hasn't played in LCS for that long.
It's like, six splits maybe.
Not even six splits for...
2019, 2020,
2021. I guess now with the last one too.
When you say way less successes though, has Santorin really had? Like, I'm kind of curious, how many titles did he actually win? Because he won with TSM.
But I think it was just the one. It might have been two.
That was, I'm trying to look back. 2017 playoffs. Oh, that was looks like a cat.
And I still
consider he was on like GCU or something.
I consider finals with like FlyQuest and stuff like that success also.
Yeah.
So I don't think you judge it purely by trophies.
Yeah, you know? I'm just thinking about like if you're talking about, you know, like what a big success would be. So it was 2015 spring, he won with TSM. So that's his one LCS championship. So it's like Blabber has two MVPs, Blabber won, you know, multiple titles, Blabber you know, has been to Worlds and stuff. Like,
and I think a lot of the older junglers that we hold up, when you actually look at their accolades in a like quantity perspective, they're not huge.
Xsmithy's is.
Xsmithy is an exception. His is fat as hell. Yeah. But for like Meteos, he actually only had, you know, in air quotes, like two with the C9 years. I think it was only two titles and some finals appearances, again, kind of like Santorin. But then after that, it was some of the Phoenix Ones days and the 100 Thieves days. And like he had a long career, you know, but like Meteos dominant 1v9ing was like a 2 year period, odd one as well, someone who has a ton of accolades and obviously a very influential player, you know, he only played a couple years, honestly, compared to some of the players like Santorin and Smithy, who played like 7+ years at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's getting up there. I do think if you're talking about like greatest of all time type thing, for me, like the trophies do matter, and that's why Smithy's still number one.
Smithy's the only argument then, if you're going right.
And he is number one for me for sure. You know, I think Blaber, which I was just saying Blaber because like amongst Medios and Santorin, I think he should be in that discussion. But to me, it's Smithy for sure. I think Santorin, though, has been consistently one of the best junglers in the league. And I think, you know, if he starts picking up some titles with TL, where if he can stay healthy and TL stays together, like there's no reason this team couldn't win a number of titles. They did win Lock-In. I don't really count that as like a full LCS championship, but they're clearly capable of it, and he is playing as good or better than he ever has, like 7 years in, right? So it's not like he's going anywhere unless he decides he wants to.
All right, any wrap-up ideas on some of the 3-0 series? Because Immortals 3-0 Dignitas. Good reaction.
So, I mean, for me, like, my biggest takeaway out of those two, so C9 3-0 GG was kind of like, okay, I'm not that surprised, right? You know, I think that if C9 plays at their best, they could be a title contender. I didn't see Golden Guardians at that level. I don't think C9 played flawlessly. This didn't change my opinion of them one way or the other, right? I do think that how Immortals played changed my opinion of them. You can say that it's just against Dignitas, and like that, sure, that's fair. The remaining teams are all much better than Dignitas that they would have to beat. But I do think that Immortals played some of their best League of Legends of the year in this series. It was against a weaker opponent, but they showed, you know, a variety of strategies. They played aggressive. I have faith in their coaching staff. The players seem confident. So like, I would not be absolutely shocked if there was some sort of like an upset. You know, I've even heard rumors wise that Immortals is beating TSM in scrims like nonstop. I don't know how much that matters or how true that is, but it's like, I would not be shocked if Immortals beat a C9 or a TSM. I think that would still be a big upset. I wouldn't bet on it, but you know, you time travel back and you tell me that this happened, I wouldn't be mind blown, because I think they look pretty good in their first series.
You're gonna do predictions here in a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm going to predict them to lose. But like, it would be an upset, but they look better than I thought they would.
Yeah, I agree. I think for Dignitas as well, I was a little disappointed in them, where Dignitas has had this year that people were excited about them because they were not full of superstar names and they were doing decent. But all their playoffs in spring and summer were just them getting clapped left and right.
Mystery of Saligo benching.
I mean, the Saligo benching, the Dardox stuff. There's a lot of the roster moves that like kind of soured the season, but I also think how it ended so negatively against Immortals, who, like you said, looked a lot better, but you would think it would be a competitive series even if Immortals won.
Yeah.
And Dig just got absolutely clapped and didn't really look like they had any life.
It was the same thing in spring, and I talked about it going into the playoffs on the dive episode pre-playoffs, that I didn't expect Dignitas to do anything in playoffs because I feel like they have one win condition. And even if you do pretty well in the regular season, when you have like one win condition and it's usually just like Afro and Neo are going to have a great game and then maybe you can win, it's like, well, guess what? Teams prep for that and they draft around that. And Giloto even talked about that like that is their win condition and they're going to draft around it. They played mages against it that just pushed a wave clear, don't interact with them at all. They played Syndra into it. They played Ziggs into it. They drafted winning lanes elsewhere and they punished a lot of the obvious weaknesses that Dignitas have. So it's like, they just are not a well-rounded team. I think that they're pretty fun to watch during the regular season, both spring and summer. They had some good games. They had some pop-off moments, but you need more than like one real threat. And it never felt at any point in that series that Fake God or Yasui were like a threat to carry a game. And if you don't have that from your soul laners, it's too easy, I think, to draft around the win conditions they did have.
All right. Shall we move on to the Twitter question then?
Let's move on.
We've got one here, very applicable to our conversation on last weekend. And it is from Rox Omega. Who turned it on / turned it around better, 100 Thieves or Team Liquid? Now, we've just spent the last 5 minutes talking about Team Liquid and their amazing turnaround, but it does remind me, this question does remind me of during the 100 Thieves series, if Danny had not made that play, this for sure was going to be a 3-1 100 Thieves, and they looked better than they have looked in weeks. So I think it is a good targeted question as far as bringing 100 Thieves back into the conversation, even with so much shifting over to the success of Team Liquid?
I mean, I'll go back to 100 Thieves because we should talk more about them, but I will say 100 TL for this question, just because their summer split looked worse than 100 Thieves.
Yeah.
Whereas like 100 Thieves was in this like, are they slumping mode? TL was slumping and they were on yeah, fire.
There's no question.
Yeah, they were like struggling for a 500 record for part of the split. So to then go in 3-1, two teams pretty dominantly in playoffs is like, okay, yeah, you turned it around really hard.
They were 2-10 versus the top four teams. And people are like, yeah, but they didn't have Santorin. Well, they were 1-5 with Santorin against the top four teams. So they like that is just such an enormous turnaround. Like, I agree. 100 Thieves look great. I'm excited for 100 Thieves. I felt watching 100 Thieves in this series that this is the first time I saw like the same strengths that they demonstrated since the beginning of the split, where they were coming out, they were doing these set dives, they were playing aggressive, they had a clear plan. Abadaga looked so involved as far as like, you know, his actual play with the team, moving around the map and stuff. Like, it felt like them in early summer, and that was really exciting. Because, yeah, it was a close series against EG. It was made closer by a Heroic play and Heroic series from Danny. But EG is a really good team, and EG is a team that I honestly thought was going to beat them. So I think 100 Thieves did make a pretty big turnaround. It's just like you went, kind of like you're saying, from pretty good to great again. And TL went from, like, down in the dumps to I think, the heavy favorite to win the whole thing.
I think it's interesting because the amount of early game leads that 100 Thieves got surprised me. I would have thought that it would be a little back and forth where it's like 100 Thieves win this early game, but then they lose the next one and like EG is going to make some plays. But actually EG lost most early games. I think they won a single early game in the entire series.
So one of the big things was Closer was on a warpath for ganking. He was on a rampage, okay? Yeah. And it did cost him inexperience early on. He did actually waste some time in some of the, you know, routes he's going for. But I liked his interview afterwards, where he was talking about coming into this. Main thing on his mind was, don't be afraid, play to the limits. He came in with the goal of being a gank-heavy jungler and sacrificing some camps, some experience, some selfish jungle style to have this sort of effect. And that does get left out to dry if also your support is not doing their part in the similar sort of roams. I feel like jungle support has reemerged in our playoffs as being this giant topic of it's insanely important for all teams now with the changes that we saw from 100 Thieves and Team Liquid especially. And then after the Team Liquid Cloud 9 series, Vulcan, I feel like his roaming numbers just jacked way up.
He was like, what am I doing this previous
series? And then Sword Art, like it was going like everywhere.
Everybody has having to respond to this style. And I think it really did start there, that like Closer's like, okay, I'm going to be getting a whole bunch. I had Huhi didn't get as much praise as Closer, but he really had a successful impact too, because I specifically remember one of the ganks where we set it up and Dzuka was on Lucian again, and coming from Champ Select, we were like, okay, well, they do have better ganking jungler and better ganking support matchup, because they had Nautilus, opponent had Braum. I forget what Closer had, but it was better ganking than whatever the opponent jungler was. Closer ganks, he trades flash for flash. That doesn't get anything unless Huhi follows it up. Huhi comes through on the Nautilus. They punish the flashless because he flashes and mid lane flashes, and they actually get the kill.
You need
both parts. You need that coordination, and that's really what brought it together.
I think the other part that worked so well for 100 Thieves was Someday, because he was not on All Pro Valet. A lot of people were saying, like, of the people on 100 Thieves, he might be the weak link, in air quotes.
He baited Impact into picking Jason, doing nothing with it.
Yeah, dude, he went up against Impact and was like, I don't care that people think you're the best top in the league. Some people, you know, a lot of the EG people were hyping Impact up to like, I don't know how Fudge possibly got first team all over Impact. Impact slams him all the time. And then it's like, well, now he's not really doing much in the series for Someday. And like, it felt good to see Someday playing well and largely handling Impact. I mean, there was a lot of focus and ganks and roams and all this stuff, because that's how you play the game right now. But
yeah,
I think a lot of people, myself included, would have expected Impact to be winning that 1v1 matchup more heavily.
The Gangplank blind was definitely a big asset, just in Champ Select as well as in the game, because he did so much fun.
I mean, his laning was so good on GP. Like, he was handling
slamming,
the Jace. And that's one of those things where, like, it can, you know it can happen as a Jace, but if you get down and then you get zoned off the waves, and then it's like all of a sudden you're now too far behind to ever really play the lane aggressively, and then you can't do anything, right? Like, there's just certain matchups, and we saw it demonstrated a number of times this weekend, the Wukong game from Huni, the GP and the Jace, where it's like someone has great laning early, And then their team just slams it home by like three men top, TPing up, roaming up, whatever it is, right off the bat, and zoning them off the stacked wave that this player has created from their really good laning, right? And that just puts it as a top laner sometimes into a position where you can no longer do anything. You just have to hope your team can bail you out or carry the game elsewhere, because you're in a matchup where you have to play aggressive to do anything. And you can't win the all-in anymore because you have freaking half their gold. So it's like, it was really impressive. And I am just excited to see that kind of shift in meta, because whether the supports each came to it individually that this is the way to play the game, or whether it is someone imposing their will on the other support, it's just fun to watch, right? And we had that one game, that CoreJJ versus Vulcan series last week, where C9 lost, and CoreJJ had 0% duo procs.
0.4%. Okay. And that 0.4 came in at the very last, like we at cut the off the timer 15. At 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was when he went down for a dragon. Okay. And Tactical came up to it. It was like, ooh, we're near each other.
So it's like, that's unheard of, right? And Vulcan was incredibly low in that game as well, because you have to match the roams. Unless you can punish the 2v1, you must match the roam. That's just the way that support works. And to see Bard coming in as part of this now, to see that become high priority for Sword Art, and, you know, CoreJJ as well, like going back and forth, and it's just so cool, because I think that there are ways to punish these types of picks, especially like blind bards. I would love to see more mages come in. I would love to see that sort of aggressive play. When Zyra was getting hovered for Ashe Zyra,
I thought he should have done it.
Yeah, I thought he should have done it too. I think that like that maybe next week is something we could see, right? Because if people are going to just be blind picking Bard, it's not that strong of a laning champion. You can punish this. Yes, you have to protect a Zyra Ashe lane and these types of pushing lanes with your jungle, but like, you can punish these in different ways.
Well, I was about to say, yes, you can punish it, but that's already warping the game plan that you picked Bard for.
Yeah.
And because they're picking Bard to go top for these matchups. And then, you know, in that game, the reason I was so excited for them to do it was because they had such a stable top side of the map already with Trundle, Orion, I forget the top laner, but it was, you know, some front to back kind of safe thing. And I was like, pick a volatile lane. Don't let the Bard roam. Just like lock them down in lane. And then they didn't do it. But I think when you saw the Thresh Caitlyn that they did, like, and they dominated that game in the regular season, I'm waiting to see, you know, when the meta goes full circle and someone tries to do this blind roaming crap, and you're like, I'm just gonna slam your bot lane.
Yeah, that's the next evolution that we're looking for, is knowingly picking safer solo lanes so that the roaming won't have as big of an impact, while simultaneously picking turret destroying bottom lane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key, because sometimes you'll be able to zone off the enemy AD carry or whatever, and you can get something there, but you really want to be hammering turret plates down there to get money and take that turret down early, and then rotate your bottom duo to the other lanes and get your advantages that way, if you're able to keep this hyper roaming style from having ineffective time used elsewhere on the map. That's when you get to see the other side of it. It looks glorious now, where everyone's like struggling to keep up with CoreJJ, and they're like, get back here. And he's making a play. And they're like, well, I'm wasting all my time too, and I'm not getting a play. And so you're just like, whoa, that's crazy.
What do you do against it?
Well, you know, if they had picked something for destroying bottom side and getting that guaranteed value, then it'd be an interesting look.
It'll be exciting. And that's one of the most fun parts about playoffs, is when there are these evolutions, you know, even within the series, right? We saw that in multiple series, the TSM TL one, TSM coming in with this, you know, big red side plan, that not working, having a change, you know, what would that look like if they match up again later on? I think that's so much fun.
It's funny to me too, in talking through that last explanation, there's a lot of scenarios where that type of thing happens in solo queue, and that support is getting reported. This Shen was never in my lane. Yeah. Where is River Shenning me? What is this, a meme? And that's like
helicopter.
Helicopter. Yeah.
There was also a big controversy over the roaming Teemo support.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember like a year ago or something?
Yeah.
Where it was like, he was like, oh yeah, this is my strategy, I'm Teemo roaming mid.
Well, that's support. Just straight griefing. Helicopter just roams all the time. Yeah. I don't think he's, well, maybe he is, but he's I don't think he's
it's at least hidden better than the Teemo.
They can guess on it. All right, our 100 MVP question for this week: with Danny's performance in game number 4 versus 100 Thieves, what are the other moments in LCS careers that made you think you were watching a future superstar?
I got a depresso answer and I got a good answer. Which one do
only
you want?
I have a one that didn't turn out to be a superstar.
Only yeah. happy answer.
So do your happy answer.
We're copium.
So my happy answer is Bunny Fufu. And I know people are going to be like, he wasn't a superstar, but he was first place on Gravity. He had starting time on C9. They were reasonably successful. And when he came in to work with us on Curse, he saved our asses because we were struggling in the support position. And his Thresh was immediately dominant. You know, like it was must ban against him. Otherwise, he destroyed you with it.
Mm-hmm. And his Thresh was actually insane.
His Thresh was actually like, I was like, this is one of the best Threshes in the world. Like, holy crap. This like 17-year-old kid who's like still in high school.
You just reminded me, what happened to Hakuho?
Him and Apollo, I don't
know.
They
both didn't get picked up this year.
Yeah, pretty sure. Anyways, back to my story. the one play that really stuck out to me was... We got a special instead, and he went to the academy or the challenger team at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was when they had the qualification or the relegations before the qualification match. They were playing CLG. They took him to five games. There's this one play in the top side, and if you can find this play, it's so good. It's Doublelift Tristana, and he is chasing him down with Thresh, and he goes for a flash, but like it's a parallel flay he has to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas normally you flash flay in the same direction, but he has to like re-angle his mouse.
Yeah, so you.
Yeah, and it was actually a pretty dope play. And then he hit the follow-up hook on the flash after and like kind of predicted where he was gonna flash. And he's just like crapped all over Doublelift. And I was like, this kid's so goddamn good. I cannot get enough of watching him play Thresh.
Do you have a happy one?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a recent one, but it's a happy one. Tactical Kalista, yeah. Right? I think that's one that stood out for a lot of people. That going into him individually looking quite good at Worlds was like, damn, this guy's going to be really, really good. And, you know, I think he has been a lot better, even though TL was actually struggling. He had been kind of like one of the consistent parts for the team. And it's kind of been interesting that some of our top teams have had their most consistent member be like the young guy that you wouldn't really expect. Like I felt like Tactical was kind of the most consistent guy in the regular season on this team full of like all super veterans, Cloud9 as well. You have like Perks, who's like the most, you know, most titles and accolades of any Western player. And it's like Fudge, who's the most consistent best player on his team, right? And all these young guys that are coming up and having those moments. But definitely the Danny play gave me big flashbacks to the Tactical, just kind of like 1v9 Kalista game.
Yeah, I mean, the Core JJ just tweeted so...
Core JJ with the curse, the premonition, before too. I was like, that is on the nose. And as soon as I saw that, and I even said at the beginning of that game like, this is,
you're not wrong, but how dare you?
Because I have a similar feeling. It's for the Tactical one too. It's not like it was all flowers and butterflies and everything, this pathway for him. You know, he had the whole struggling period in spring of the, you know, Malphite, Tristana type of thing. But it wasn't just that. It was a lot of instances of like getting picked off mid-game and stuff. Yeah. And I would totally agree. Like he is peaking again right now. Varus, Kalista, Ziggs, all he has been extremely good recently. So I'm again filling with that hope. It's part of the the hope you have that's going around is these young guys.
What's your play?
My play? So the first thing I thought of when I first read this in the story document for a question was actually Rush. A jungler.
I like that one.
As a jungler, I would just get googly eyes watching some of these Rush plays. And I would just watch him, you know, stream because he's funny, but then the plays that he would go for on invading people, and he would only play Lee Sin and Nidalee and these champions that you can just make the most ridiculous outplays that in the instances where he screwed it up, it would be hilarious as hell too, because he would also be joking about it and stuff. But on the ones that he pulls it off, like that's instant clip. Like that thing is, you know, front page because of how mechanically gifted he was. And he also just had this vision of how aggressively he wanted to go for all these invades and outplay the duo, but also outplay the collapsing laner. So that was my one, but it is kind of sad because it didn't really play out, and he went back to Korea and went back to school and all that.
You know the like historic one that I thought of too was when the Faker's first pro game, he was playing Nidalee, right? And he solo killed, I think it was Ambition, when Ambition was still a mid laner. That's one that I think like a lot of people will reference as kind of this historical moment, because it was like a lot of hype around this new guy, solo queue star, whatever, coming into the league. And Ambition at the time was, you know, considered one of the big names in the league, and he just solo kills his ass first game, you know, has a really good game, and obviously, you know, goes on to do a couple good things.
Oh, man, you scouted that young Faker guy?
I found him
good eye.
In the pro game when he was already playing.
I found him when he was signed by SKT in the LCK.
The one other one I'll throw for the OG is the Turtle Penta when he replaced Kaox for the weekend, and it was like, goodbye your starting job. This kid's taking your spot.
I really thought you were going to go with the Turtle Tristana play against Cloud9, against Sneaky,
I mean, that one, maybe a bigger moment in terms of
To me, the mechanics of that one were more intense, because I was casting the Caitlyn one also.
This is just a Penta, Caitlyn, in the ball.
Exactly. It was like a, I don't know, Caitlyn can't be as cool as...
But in terms of future superstar, getting the Penta in his subbed in game, that was like, here's a super... Because he was already a bit of a superstar when he was on TSM for that long, but that play was like, oh, he just subbed in.
He's going to do some good things.
Yeah, like this, keep your eye on him.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was a good one.
All right, we got a bunch of series coming up this weekend. Three to cover, because Sunday, obviously, we don't know what the teams are going to be. On Thursday, Cloud9 versus EG. This feels like such a big matchup.
I'm laughing at the title someone put in here. 5 million down the drain.
Well, C9 was a lot more than 5 million. Everyone says 11 million was the total deal, apparently.
Wasn't the buyout 6? I don't know.
I don't even know. I mean, you never know, million? Too, because 50? some of the contracts that get listed are super fraudulent. It sounds fun to say, but it's like, people are like, it's an $11 million deal.
I mean,
and then there's all these incentives and bonuses attached that it's like, you get, you know, X million, you get like 1 or 2 million, and then everything else is based on like, if you win Worlds 6 times in a row, you get the rest.
I just like that you can just keep increasing it and nobody's going to bat an eye.
The $14 million deal.
The 7 million, the 8 million, the 12 million, the 50. Where do we draw the line? Maybe at like 20 or something that. But it definitely has some leeway. And there's so much that goes along with this match. I have a hard time deciding between which one I actually want as our representative. They're both so good. With Danny having that recent performance,
I want EG.
You're like, damn, I really want them there, but I also really want Cloud9 there.
EG?
I do.
I
why? Because Perk's name?
But also the brand. I always count on Cloud9 for North America at Worlds. And adding Perks to it, I was like, at the beginning of the year, I was like, this is a shoo-in. Okay, you know, we're going to have some to count on. So
they've lost the magic for me a little bit. Uh-huh. I've just been pretty consistently disappointed with Perks for almost this whole split. He has had good moments, but since MSI, I just have not been impressed overall, you know? And that's tough to say because I felt the same as you. I was like, holy shit, this is so big. We're gonna have this guy, and he is gonna always show up internationally. And I was starting to waver a little bit with MSI because I was like, okay, well, it's just one bad thing.
But actually crack me up when you're tweeting like the picture of yourself with the like dead eyes staring off into the distance, and then
a bunch of other people tweeted that.
You also had like some like grave tweet or whatever too about them like lowering you down into your coffin again and shit. And they weren't even eliminated yet. They still had like another like tiny hope of tiebreakers. And I was like, what the hell?
You can just meme it up. That's the whole point of Twitter, Kobe. Welcome to the internet. I post dumb shit on my Twitter, especially during international.
I just remember walking back and being like, oh.
Well, I mean, I cast their elimination game. That was where everyone was posting the pictures of me with dead eyes because I was dead inside. They absolutely... Like, they threw the game, like, 5 minutes in, and it was like, oh, they've lost. And then you're casting, and you have to be like, wow, what an amazing play. You know, you're, like, all hyped up for the other team, because it is a, you know, big moment for the other team still. Like, I cast them losing to Pentanet, and then I also cast, I think, the final game, where they're actually officially eliminated. So it was just, like, double dose of depression. So that may have something to do with it, but I just wasn't that impressed with them. In their playoff series against TL, I think they kind of looked out of sorts. I think that they haven't looked as good throughout summer. I've just had EG as a better team than them throughout almost all of summer. And I think that Jizuke played a worse than average series for himself against 100 Thieves. You can say that Danny played a better than average series, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is the difference. But like I right now feel like EG, I would rather bet on them winning the championship than Cloud9. Cloud9 has more than enough talent to do it. Just like when I was talking about TL, I didn't think TL would do well in the first round of playoffs because guess what? They hadn't been looking good. But of course they can because they have incredible talent and C9's the same. But from what I have seen on the actual LCS games, EG just looks better. And I'd rather see them play really aggressive and play up tempo. And I just think they're the better team right now.
I'm super looking forward to this because Glaff has half full sort of perspective on it,
yeah.
Is that because it's a full best of five, whoever does come out on top winning this, I feel like I will for sure be convinced and happy that is the representative because I do still have so much faith in Cloud9. Like we could see, you know, similar improvements in this.
Well, they still have to go further. The winner of this doesn't go to Worlds because the winner of this will play.
But exactly. But you have to start like eliminating big contenders so early on that I feel like, you know, we are going to be pretty happy with the way that it shakes out since our you know playoff format is so extensive and has the double round robin and has all, you know, best of fives all the way through. So I feel like it sifts out some of the, you know, uncomfortable feeling where people are like, I wish this team was here, I wish that team was here. I'm always on the side of the camp that's like, they won, that's the team that deserves to be here. When people afterwards are like, they only, you know, won that one best of five or whatever, and I want this team to be here, that team doesn't deserve to be here.
I hate that retroactive stuff. I hated that after Worlds when everyone's like, TSM didn't deserve to be there, such and such would have done better. It's like, well, they won the title.
Exactly.
They were the best team in the league, so they did deserve to be there.
Yeah, I think for this specific matchup, digging into how it's going to go, for me, I am most curious about the top side of the map because that's what I expected EG to have this really dominant play around in the 100 Thieves series, and it just didn't really materialize ever. There was no snowballing. There was no, like, they're in their face all the time. It was very scrappy, and they were trying to make plays. It wasn't like they didn't get anything done, but I'm wondering if Blabber can kind of pull off the same thing because Perks, Blabber, and Fudge, in theory, to your point about on paper, should be a good enough topside to try and go toe-to-toe with EG, who looked kind of weak.
I mean, I think if you look on paper, if you look at name value, Cloud9 should be better in literally every role.
But I even mean, like, some of their performances this split. Like, Blabber started playing better in the back half of the split. Fudge has been relatively good the whole time. He got first All-Pro.
Yeah.
And it's really just, like, can Perks, you know, not get hard targeted the way he did against TL? It's only that one thing, actually, for me that makes me wonder about that. Whereas I would say on name brand, sure, you know, Blabber versus
Closer. I mean, I guess the argument would be, obviously, Impact has much bigger name than Fudge, but Fudge, like, right now.
Yeah. So I'm using recency bias.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I feel like even though we've seen so much roaming around top lane, this feels more to me like a series that's going to be decided by the mid laners, just because I think that both Perks and Jizuke are extremely aggressive players. I don't think either of them are going to be like the guy to back down. I think they're going to go at each other. I think that both Ignar and Vulcan want to roam. Both the junglers, like, you know, Svenskeren and Contracts want to play aggressive. Blabber definitely wants to play aggressive. I think, like, so goes mid lane, so goes the series. Because so much of it has been about team coordinated efforts and moving around the map. And if your mid laner is having the better day, if your mid laner is dominating there, then that unlocks the ability to move around the map and enable your jungler, enable your support to get even more done. And I'm really excited for this. Like, this is the one that I am like so hyped for out of the lower bracket matchups, because I think these are two really aggressive teams. I think these are two teams that have insanely high skill caps. And like, I think it is going to be like a slugfest. I think it's going to be nonstop roaming, nonstop action. And I just feel like whoever has the better mid laner on the day is probably going to be the team that's actually winning it.
Yeah, I agree that I think this one is going to follow the trend of the super high roam timers and creating plays all over the place too, because I actually forget who the opponent was, but the previous game of the best support roam, you know, before playoffs started, was actually Vulcan. Mm-hmm. And it was his thresh roam up top to defend Fudge on the tower dive that literally wins them the game for like 5 minutes or something like that. And Fudge is like, he was Gwen. He got three kills on Gwen at 5 minutes. And they just steamroll this game because of the timer that, you know, after the fact came out that Fudge was communicating well and told him or called him up on a support roam timer. But I think that this the way that early playoffs has gone just kind of cemented that in these players' minds. And it really does seem like, you know, Vulcan especially is really taken to that. I'm thinking that Ignar is also going to follow suit as it plays right into his style. So maybe we get 1v1s in the bottom lane. Too maybe Danny's not had the best CS numbers for 2v2 bottom lanes, but what about 1v1s?
He actually did have a number of CS leads and stuff with his Tristana games and stuff.
Yeah,
they took a lot of turrets and
the funny part about that one was a lot of them were either they left him bottom and did Rift Herald plays up there, and so it actually was kind of 1v1 or 1v0 sometimes. And then they also in mid game rotated him to, you know, keep
someone
pushing.
Some of them match up too, like Kaisa and Tristana. Yeah. You know, it's like, all right, well, the Kaisa's probably not
and
having a good time.
That's part of the reason he doesn't just pick Tristana willy nilly and people questioning like, oh, not wanting to pick it into the Felios and that type of thing. I think that it is important, actually, at all levels of the game, where people generally will want to just latch onto what is highest win rate or what is, you know, best for them or number one comfort, rather than having a good set of things to choose from. What's best for the situation does actually go a long way.
Unless you're talking about mid lane, then it's Ryze and LeBlanc and Syndra only. Which I think is probably, I expect.
And Lissandra if they pick LeBlanc.
No, Lissandra's no.
No Lissandra into LeBlanc?
No, it's dead.
Okay, fine.
I don't like
it. What about the melee champs? I mean, Jensen had a pretty nice Lee Sin game.
I feel
pretty
like...
Pretty nice Lee Sin game. I agree.
He did, but I don't know. Jizuke, not the same.
He had two, actually. He had two good Lee Sin
games. Both,
what about some of that Lucian flying around?
There was some Lucian, you're right. There was some Lucian in there. Yeah. But I would expect, given that Perks had priority on Ryze as well in the Golden Guardian series, mm-hmm. I wonder how high, because there's like this kind of like arms race that you get into sometimes with priority champions where it's like, well, we like Ryze. It's like, well, we like Ryze. So normally I would take it third pick first phase, so you can't ban it second phase. But now I need to take it second phase on my blue side. And it's like, well, I need to pick it first phase. Yeah, and then it's always, it's like first pick, first ban out of nowhere. And like, I could actually see that happening again in the series where both teams use Ryze well. Both players are good Ryze players. Both teams can play 1-3-1. And to that point about, I forget what you said, like mid lane, this being a mid lane series, mm-hmm. I agree, good sir. And I think especially it'll be pretty champ pool reliant mid lane series where they'll be fighting for the same picks of Syndra, Ryze, maybe Lucian and LeBlanc.
You know what I really want to see into Ryze with Ryze gaining priority is Mel'Zahar. Like, it actually is such an easy
matchup.
Someone
hovered it this weekend.
It's one, like, I love playing Mel'Zahar. And when I see Ryze, I always feel like it's so free. You know, it is one of these champions that's like, as a mid-range mage, if he's in range of attacking you, he's in range of getting ulted and silenced and locked down. And like, the voidlings really do mess up a lot of the Q usage. So it's like, solo queue wise, I know it's one of the best win rate matchups there are, but I just don't see these guys as like the Mel'Zahar guys. Like,
no.
I don't think Perks do care.
Someone picked Mel'Zahar versus Perks LeBlanc, which is the exact same idea, same strategy. And Perks just rushed a QSS.
Oh yeah.
So I know that
Golden Guardians.
And that's something not a lot of mid laners are willing
when
to do.
When was this? I remember this.
Because I know that it happened. I just know who was the Mel'Zahar against him.
Oh,
doesn't
yeah.
matter. The faceless Mel'Zahar. You guys can check right now.
Yeah, look.
But Perks was cognizant of this. He was ready for, you know, this possibility and didn't get, you know, surprised. Oh no, the R, just click R, you know, stuff me.
I can't
type
do
of thing.
Anything.
Yeah. It does have a significant cost. Especially as a mage building QSS.
And especially if you have an AD jungler. Like, if you're not overloaded on magic damage, then QSS feels really bad to build.
But he did it. He was willing to do it. He committed to it. And it worked beautifully. And he played well with it. So I do think that he has that, at least in the back of his head, or will be ready for
it. I mean, there are answers. It's not that you can't do anything, but it's a really strong matchup. And I just think it's honestly a really strong matchup against a lot of those popular picks, against Ryze, against LeBlanc. You know, it is something that can really get you easy priority and shut down roams in a different way. If they roam away from you, voidlings do insane damage to towers. So I would be interested to see like the next evolution, whatever it is, right? We talked about that for bot lane. I think that exists for mid lane too. If people are hyper focused on these couple picks, then people should find what they are comfortable playing into them that are really significant like advantages as far as the matchups go. But I think you could talk about that kind of across the board, and we should probably move forward to the next series. But like, jungle is going to be really interesting too, because I mean, Blabber feels like he is so much better on these couple AD kind of brawly junglers like Olaf and Zinn. You know, and like Lee Trundle, that kind of grouping than he is on the AP style junglers. So it's like, if you go too much into AD mid laners, then maybe you can force them on Diana and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what preparation these teams bring.
Okay, predictions.
Also predict the jungler starting for EG.
Contracts. I think just because they committed to him so heavily, I would be surprised if they, like, Peter Dunn and, like, my read on his philosophy feels like he would not doubt their preparation that Contracts is the guy to play off of, like, a couple games that maybe weren't played the best. Because I didn't even think Contracts was bad. I just honestly thought Closer was amazing.
I can't weigh in because I know too much info. So I'm actually going to abstain.
Okay.
That's why I'm not friends with anyone.
Yeah.
Because then I don't have any info. So for me, at least serious prediction, EG, am I a coward and I say 3-2?
Well, you are a coward, but are you going to say 3-2?
Oh, it was against Triple. It was the game that FlyQuest played there, played Triple and Tomo and Diamond and stuff.
I'm going to say 3-2.
I actually don't think that that's cowardly. 3-1 is the numerically most likely to happen.
It's just a lot of 3-1s in NA
out, yeah, just if you take out.
Just literally everywhere. Yeah. It's just math. Yeah.
All right, 3-2 for him.
I'm on EG's side. I think I'll go 3-2 as well. I think it's going to be close. Honestly, like, I'm pretty happy whoever wins. I just hope that they, like, it sounds so cheesy, but, like, I just hope that it's a
good story. I just want to see good games.
I do. Because I want to believe in, I see these as our two most, like, crazy aggressive teams. And I see that as the style that has the best chance of succeeding internationally, just like the Peter Dunn interview, the conversation about the soul of the LCS. I think playing aggressive, playing up tempo, playing crazy, that gives you the best chance to do something internationally. So I want to see these teams playing well because I think they're the ones that fit that style best.
I'm saying Cloud9 strong, also 3-2. If you're a coward, then we're all 3-2 cowards.
We all got our
But I don't stats. Think that it's cowardly to do 3-2. I think 3-1 is actually more.
I mean, these are close series. These are teams that were pretty close.
You know, even if I am going for Cloud9, Danny's going to have a game that he saves for sure. And so that'll get him at least two. So,
at least a one every time.
We're just going by the numbers here. Yeah. Every best of five that he plays.
Minus the one that he played before this one. TSM versus Immortals, the Friday matchup. Probably, in most people's eyes, the most lopsided of the series this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the favor of?
Of TSM in people's eyes, but Azale has heard birds chirping in his ear that Immortals are going to slam him, and that's why he's predicting them.
As I said, I'm definitely predicting TSM. I have heard that Immortals is bonking them on the head in scrims. I've heard the scrims are not going well for TSM. And I do...
Wait, scrimming each other prior to this week then?
Probably this
prior,
last week.
Yeah, it must have been prior then. Yeah.
So I do wonder how confident TSM will feel coming off of the TL series. Will they be able to kind of just, like, shake that off? Because it felt like they had such a clear plan going into the TL series, and it failed so catastrophically.
Yeah.
Right? It was so clear. Red side is the way to play. Counter pick top. Play through top. And now, is your prep coming away from that?
Pick Jarvan.
Yeah. Okay, that was their game four draft was like a hate crime on League of Legends. Like, it was horrible.
Ask
it was
any just... jungler, like, how do you like playing J4 into Syndra? And it's like, I don't ever want to gank that lane. I'm just going to get stunned out of everything.
It was terrible.
What's kind of funny is on live, I have been playing a decent amount of
J4
after the buffs.
You like it into Zin and stuff, though? It's like you lose the skirmish.
My pick into Zin is always Trundle.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hated that draft. I don't care. But it's like they came very, very clear game plan. Attack. Top lane from red side, counter pick for Huni. It didn't work. Game one, they got a big advantage, but they couldn't really make it matter. And that one wasn't necessarily on Huni. He couldn't extend the advantage, but also, like, the critical mistakes were, like, POE mid lane, lost in bot lane. So, like, that one's not all on Huni or anything. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but I just think those ones are really tough where there's a lot of conflating factors. Like, when I would play in a tournament and I would have a very clear idea of what I wanted to do and it just wouldn't work, it's sometimes very hard to then know, was your preparation initially just wrong? Did it not work for reasons unrelated to the strategy? Did it not work because of the specific team that you played against, you know? And I think that can sometimes really kind of, like, get in your head and mess you up and make you doubt all of this work that they have done, because they had an extra week of prep. They went for this style. Did it only not work because it's against Alfari? Did they go back against For Immortals? Like, that's my main concern for TSM, is just, like, how are they mentally and like, strategically coming into this?
I feel like sometimes I had the bye one time when we were TL Summer, and we had not, it was, we had an extra week too between playoffs and the start or the end of the regular season and start playoffs. We had 3 weeks before we took the stage again, and we tried to like use the time well and branch out and learn these new strategies and develop new comps and stuff. And like the first 2 weeks didn't go well because we were trying all this crap. And then to that point, like you're trying to recover in this third week now that we know who our opponent is and you've seen what people have been doing. And like, it can sometimes really, like you said, it's a can of worms that you open up. And sometimes you're like, well, I just wish we just kept doing what we did. And we didn't try this like red side, top side snowball thing. And now you're like, do we go back or not? And especially against Immortals, who showed 14 unique champions in 15 picks. And one of them was a flex pick as well, the repeat champion. If you're like, all right, well, what are you making a
this
face?
This is the YouTube thumbnail right there. Keep doing it.
Why are you doing that?
Make sure they get a good shot.
I'm just saying.
I'm adding emotive responses to further
empower. It looks troll. It's not empowering. It's mocking. It's satirical.
He's empowering me because I think it's funny.
Good.
He was off camera.
My point is Immortals is hard to prep against. So you're not even like, oh, well, they'll do this and we'll do that kind of thing. While they're probably floundering a little bit with their own strategy.
I have a full faith that TSM is going to win this series. I'm definitely going to predict them despite the birds talking about bonking on the head. Wait, does that mean they're going to pick Trundle? I get it. It was a code. You leaked it. He leaked it. Draft has been ruined. I still
the five roll flex for Immortals.
If there is, first. I actually think the maybe where some of that could come from, especially from scrims, is the bottom lane of Immortals. They have had some truly tremendous hard carry games for Immortals just in the regular season. But mm-hmm. then if you also put that against some of the misplays that Lost has had in some of these recent games, you know, maybe it is like, oh, Destiny's just hooking him over and over and over, and they just land every skill shot, and mm-hmm. they're snowballing off bottom tower and dragon stacking, and I can definitely, you know, craft this or try and recreate these wins for them. So I am actually still excited, even though I do, you know, favor TSM.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think it's more TSM one side. And for everything that I'm saying about like, ooh, maybe they doubt their strategies and all this, at least my take on it was, well, you tried it against Alfari and he is so good at laning that it just didn't work as well as it should have, right? Like you actually got Huni up like 40 CS on Aurelia. But if you weren't playing against Alfari, Huni probably just solo kills whoever he's playing against. And that was kind of my takeaway. I don't know if it's going to be the same for TSM, but you know, I'm pretty confident with how their top side is playing. Like their top three, I like a lot more than the Immortal side. I do have concerns about Lost, and that's always been my concern for TSM. Is just I just think he is a weakness. I think he's a fine LCS level AD carry, but he seems to make a lot of mistakes, and he doesn't usually dominate in lanes. And so there is always that concern that, you know, he could be picked on. I don't think that like Raze and Destiny are this like bot lane that's going to slam them every time, but they have had some really good performances where maybe they can make it happen. But I think as long as like Spica and PoE are playing really well, especially those two, like that, they just have such an advantage, I think, in mid and jungle.
The one thing I would caveat is I feel like in the TL series, and I don't expect Immortals to be as good in macro as TL, but I was not loving TSM's like lane assignments. They did a lot of really troll stuff even in the early game where like Huni TP's to mid and then has to run all the way back top because it's like, wait, why would we actually do this lane assignment? And then the first game, the whole reason they lost that game was because they were a 4-1 comp against a 1-3-1 comp, and they kept shadowing PoE in the side lane because like, okay, yeah, you're Gnar, or you slam the Gnar and he's scared of the Aurelia, but then they split the LeBlanc who's not even fed. Syndra doesn't want to be in the side lane against it, so they keep shadowing the Syndra. There's that long chase down sequence in the top side where they lost a couple of kills, and then the whole bot lane thing was because they sent their jungle and support down to the bot lane to support the Syndra, the Ziggs had no way to get over. So he TPs into the bot lane, sacks mid priority, and then that gives TL the dragon for free, and that's when he walks forward and kills himself. And so there were a lot of like macro mistakes I was watching from them mm-hmm. where I was like, wow, this does not look good out of TSM. So even if they play the early game of this roaming heavy playstyle well, their setups, like they're different when you pick a lot of like scrappy champions. Mm-hmm. And so like I feel like there's still a little, there's a lot more to clean up than just like, mm-hmm. well, TL's better players or like they had a better understanding. I think that I can see why they might be losing scrims to a lot of other teams if like your mid to late game is also struggling.
Well, I think it is worth bringing up the stats from regular season, 3-0 for the matchup for TSM. Have beat Immortals every time. There was the one game where Immortals did get...
They beat TL three times in the regular season, too. The trends. The patterns. Wait,
it's actually a curse.
Zoom in.
That this is where you do the... You're supposed to do the emotive things for me. Yeah, at my point. Yeah.
That's as emotive as you get.
I like it.
I think that largely TL made TSM look bad, not TSM is bad. Mm-hmm. I just think that there was as many times as there were mistakes for TSM, like I agree with you, some of their setups weren't good, even some of the micro things in the fights, like Huni whiffed a lot of Aurelia ults in that game when he was way ahead. You know, PoE made some pretty big mistakes, flashed into the wall on Azir, and like when they had been moving towards Seoul for 30 minutes, that kind of cost them that. So like there's lots of things to look at, but I also felt like TSM legitimately had a lot of good timings on their like moves to dive. They punished Alfari really well, zoning him off of waves. I do think there were so many times where it would have been a free kill on the enemy top laner, but Santorin is already there, already defending. And we even saw the inverse happen where it's like TL just did it to Huni because, you know, TSM didn't have the perfect timing. So I'm still confident in TSM coming into this. I still think that they have a really good shot to run the lower bracket as they did before. And I'm looking at them as like probably like a 3-1 despite... hearing
the coward's number.
Well, I would have done 3-0, but then all the stuff I heard about scrims made me have a little bit of a doubt, and then I was like,
you give him one bonk on the head.
Yeah, give him one bonk.
Okay,
3-1.
I don't know what to do. I still want to go no bonks. I still want to go 3-0 TSM.
Yeah, because you're scared of being a coward. So is that more cowardly that he doesn't want to pick
is,
the coward number?
Gil Hodo can
only the brave.
Cowardception. Yeah. Only the brave will admit to being cowards. I too, 3-1 TSM.
Totally unrelated, but you guys both are really swagged out today. Like Kobe's in like a kind of like, not swaggy, but like.
This is literally a free shirt from the LCS.
No, but I mean like the basketball
it's
shorts.
It's a basketball shorts.
Basketball shorts with the high socks and like the.
Got some cool socks, Kobe.
Hell yeah.
I'm just saying you look like comfy and cool, whereas I dress as a high school math teacher today. And Azale's got a really cool dragon jacket. I didn't get
really
the memo.
The best you could do Mr. is high Zimmerman? School. I was at least giving him college professor.
Would you go by Mr. Zimmerman or Mr. Z? Would you make them use the full name as to like enforce your authority on these high school kids?
I don't know.
No,
I put zero thought into teaching.
Your gut reaction.
Yeah, so that's why I'm not the cool one, and I'm saying TSM 3-0. You guys are both hip with your 3-1s going with the times. I'm still old boomer yelling.
Leah says you're Mr.
TSM.
Mark for sure.
Mr. Mark. that sounds weird.
Well, Mr. Mark, how do you feel about Saturday? 100 Thieves versus Team Liquid for the winner's bracket.
I'm hyped. There's a lot of great ass matchups. Yeah. And so I think this one is really hard to predict because of how good 100 Thieves looked in their own series. We talked about being probably should have been a 3-1 if not for the Danny insane play. And the way that Someday was able to go up against Impact made me feel a lot better about what I thought was going to be a big problem for 100 Thieves in this matchup. I thought bot lane for 100 Thieves was going to be a bigger advantage in their favor, but given how roam heavy it is and 100 Thieves seems to be, you know, being like, all right, yeah, let's do it. The FBI laning advantage is not as important that I would have given. And so like a lot of these little factors are making it harder for me to predict because I think I would have gone 100 Thieves prior to this weekend. And now, even though they look good, I'm
actually... Really? Prior to 100 Thieves playing in playoffs at all? You would have still predicted them over...
Well, because I would have predicted 100 Thieves in playoffs after TL beat C9 because I wasn't on the TL is amazing now. Okay. I hyped train initially. That's why I predicted last week TSM to beat them. Now that I've seen them do
now
it again to another... I'm like, okay, TL's effing good, dude. And then I would have been... okay, TL wins. But then 100 Thieves look good too. And I'm like, wait! I don't know what to do now.
Mark is in
there's
a
no
constant...
cursing in Mr. Mark's class. That's why he's tapping.
I'm on the whiteboard just drawing stuff between classes.
He's also in a constant state of indecision.
Well, because I got to talk it through.
Yeah. It's
I don't think before. Do you guys think before the dive?
I never think. Yeah. Including on the dive.
I do zero pre-thought.
Wait. Do that thing again. You remember that
that
sound? Damn, that was so good. What was it from?
What episode was that?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I facepalmed. I went like
you hit your forehead.
Yeah, it was
perfect
something.
Slapping noise.
I think it was even something that,
it was on
that
the diet.
You had said, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so good. Cause I remember then you tweeted out the comments afterwards. Cause there were like all the top comments. Anyway.
I feel like the most commented thing on the dive when you look at YouTube is just always about my bald head. It's just like universal.
People are
looking shiny, sounding
good.
It's how
good. Shiny it is. It's like, you know, how recently I shaved is. It really shiny. It's not that shiny. It's at the like end of the cycle. Like I'll shave it. Yeah, yeah. You know?
It's not so shiny today. But no, that actually so is also going to need to be at the top of the comments because it's not as shiny That's as normal true. And yeah. they're like, get on this.
The shine is really lacking today.
You better shine that up before world starts. Okay,
it'll be blinding.
Or do we need you to not shave for all of worlds until so we that NA doesn't get eliminated?
It's like the playoff beard but for your hair.
We'll have the Captain Flowers poggy woggy hair and the Azale no shave.
All right,
no shave for any success.
I'm excited for this matchup as well. I think it's going to be really, really good. I am pretty heavily on the side of TL just because I actually think that the two best of fives back to back were some of the best League of Legends that we've seen just in LCS this entire year, spring or summer. I thought they played so well as a team. I think
that's where all the hope is coming from, yep, baby.
Individual laning was good. The like the way that they played out the games was good. The way that they actually answered and kind of like checkmated a lot of opponents' win conditions was really impressive. They closed out games well. They dominated Vision once they had a lead around the Baron pit incredibly well, making it so hard for teams to actually like contest them around Baron and objectives. They just kind of did everything you would want from a great team across two series. So I find it hard to bet against them now. I do think they looked better than 100 Thieves did. 100 Thieves looked really good. And the question just becomes, you know, was it about like a team not being able to rise to their level and kind of disrupt their setups in a way that TSM and C9 weren't able to? And if that happens, maybe it's a different story. But I just think that TL looked flexible, looked incredibly good across the board. And it's so hard to come away with prep after watching those two series and be like, this was the problem. There was that one game they had where Jensen was just kind of like sprinting it, but that was like it, right? That was the one game they lost against TSM. And that's the only game that has looked ugly out of all their games, I really feel like.
I think both their game threes that they lost, they did this like really weird hard pivot in draft and then also didn't play that great. You know, you talk about the Jensen stuff. I'm definitely on the train with a lot of other people that like, I don't know why the hell Alfari didn't just flash auto Huni and kill him and they insta win
in
that
the bot lane
fight.
One? Yeah, that was weird.
And so like, you know,
I think he was actually trying to stay out of range of Q heal and Gore Drinker active. Is that was my read it when I saw that, but I also thought it was.
I mean, an Ash Arrow hit him from downtown. It's like he's stunned for 3.5 seconds. Just slap him in the face.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Anyways, the point is like there's mistakes. The draft was weird, whatever. And so like I think you can sometimes, I don't want to say excuse those games, but like when you play this many games in the postseason, you're gonna have some where the things don't land right.
I think the one in the earlier series is the loss that is more excusable, because that was the one where first two games seem liquid. They come out with this new strategy. Corjay is roaming all over. They're super aggressive. We're like, okay. And then they are 2-0 up in the series and they revert basically to a way slower, you know, 5-on-5 comp, the kind of like old style. And so that one I probably give more of a, what would you call it in your class, Mark, if you give people a freebie? Mr. Mark, excuse me, sorry. Mr. Mark Z,
do you have any
Mark?
Gold stars built up? You can trade in your gold star for like a mistake, you know? Like I didn't do my homework.
Oh, I give you back the gold star.
Like you've done a lot of extra credit. You earned some gold stars. You didn't do your homework this one time. I'm like, all right, hand the gold stars back over. TL had to hand a gold star over after that draft.
I like it.
What do you guys think the way in is for 100 Thieves then? Because it starts feeling like we're all kind of TL sided.
I mean, so here's the thing, and I was gonna talk through it kind of top to bottom previously. I was gonna be more Team Liquid sided until the Someday performance most recently, holding Impact and the blind GP and him actually playing really well individually. Maybe in the third game where he face checks and gets kind of timing ganked by Svenskeren for the first one and then gets repeat ganked over and over the Gnar game, you know, the last one. Mm-hmm. But his team is accruing everything on the other side of the map. I feel like he could have avoided one of those deaths at least. But him actually, you know, having such a big impact for them gave me a lot more hope of them holding on and that not being the weakness for them. Plus, Then you look at the other side of the map, though, and Tactical is playing out of his mind. I really think Tactical deserves a lot of credit right now because he's remaining extremely flexible. He is not falling into any of the traps that he was during that lull period where we are criticizing him for you know, getting picked off a whole bunch, not playing with the team. And
even
not
with core roaming all the time.
Exactly. And so I really think he deserves a lot of credit, and that evens up what is always the biggest strength that we point to for this team of the bottom lane. So it makes it really difficult to, you know, say, oh, it's definitely going to play out this way because they've adapted. Both teams have adapted in different ways. So
one thing I'll give TL a little bit more credit for, because I was still potentially holding on to 100 Thieves. One thing I thought about was the mid to late game. There were a couple times where they had big leads and they didn't do a good job blowing them open. Whereas TL versus C9 was like, oh my God, it's 8,000 gold at 15 minutes. Or in the TSM series, like, well, it's really close throughout the mid game, but then they end the game 5 minutes after they get their game breaking play or whatever. So I think the mid to late game execution has looked a little bit cleaner. Even the game that they lost for 100 Thieves, it was a throw after being up a lot versus like, oh, we just kind of got crapped on.
This game to me is going to be determined by jungle support, I've decided.
Yeah.
I really feel like that because I think Closer is going to continue with heavy investment in ganking, and that is such a volatile style for junglers, whereas Santorin has been so good with efficient pathing. If he and or Core JJ are able to stuff even two consecutive early game plays, then I probably vote Team Liquid. If not, then I honestly think that 100 Thieves have been good enough at snowballing that'll be 100 Thieves. So
you put a conditional on your prediction?
What score?
I'll go TL. I'm going to say that they are going to be able to stuff these plays. You're not going to have consistency in that over a best of five series.
I think given how good Santorin has been about knowing where to be, to that point about stuffing the plays, I feel like I'm leaning that way too.
Yeah. Yeah.
3-2.
I'm on the 3-2 train. I think it'll be really close.
I'm going to go 3-1. I think it's not that close. I think it's not as close as that. I don't see 100 Thieves winning, but I'd be interested if I'm wrong. It is going to be an exciting one.
What's really weird too about these two teams is that both of them played the blue side style versus a team that kept spam picking red against them. And it made it really hard to be like, well, what are you guys going to do on red? Because you haven't seen as much. So the two things are actually weirder to be like, oh, well, they like this for their counter picks and stuff. I don't know. Yep.
Well, it's going to be a good one. I'm really excited for the games this weekend. We have an anchor question here.
Before the anchor question, who do you think is the last team to qualify for Worlds? Because it's going to happen this weekend. We may as well shoot our shot right now.
Oh.
Because you're saying, you know, we're both saying...
Just follow the predictions that we already made for
C9
the series then.
Add them
up.
It'd TSM. Be EG versus TSM.
Yeah, for you guys.
Man, it's hard. My gut says EG, but EG, I wouldn't be shocked if EG lost in the first round either.
And then it's C9 versus TSM.
I think it's EG or TSM. I feel like C9's not going to make it.
I don't believe in C9.
You have to follow. Yeah, you have to follow the tree of your predictions for the earlier series. So for both you guys, it's either EG or
say
TSM.
Immortals.
For me, it's
just screw your tree.
Okay, well, Mark is wrong.
I think they're going to lose in the first round. Then
let's
come
make
back in the next
bet.
Round.
All right, they lose, but then I also say they make Worlds. Yeah.
Who do you think?
I'm gonna stick with Cloud9 then.
All right.
If I have enough faith that they're going to get through the. Through the EG series, I think they're going to get through the whole gauntlet.
All right, well, it's going to be a banger. Anchor question, Immune Buffalo, let's get it.
Hey guys, Immune Buffalo here. I love the show. Mark, you're my favorite. It pains me to admit it, but it's true. My question is, how would the game be played differently by pro players if they could see the total amount of gold in the game? Thanks, have a good one.
Immune Buffalo gets the first Mark Z gold star ever.
I think you should get two gold stars, one for complimenting you and one for a question I like.
I like this question a lot too because it's something that is not considered very often by fans because we just see the gold plastered in our face the whole time, but players don't know it. I mean, that's literally all we talk about. It's like the metric of who's winning the game more than turrets or kills.
It's the score.
I have a very different take
gold
on
gold is the score.
Well, there is a lot of times where I've like in scrims, my team has no idea how far ahead or behind they were. And I think you look at that CLG game that happened where they're 8K ahead and they're getting pushed in. And they're like, we can't fight. We can't do anything because they are scared and they're not used to winning and having this gold and whatever you want to get into the psychology of it. But I think there's a lot of times people don't actually know the gold. They just know the feel of the game. And sometimes you psych yourself out of winning situations when you're actually fine. Or, you know, you're more convinced that you're okay when you're not.
So I think how different would it be played? Probably not that different. I think most games would look very similar,
yes,
if not the same. But I do think that there are games where it is significant. And I think that it comes, you know, with teams that have a lack of confidence or aren't good at actually evaluating how strong of a position they are. For sure, for lower ranked teams, it probably matters less for the high ranked teams, because I think the teams that are at the top of the table in all the leagues generally,
they're playing
with
confidence no matter what.
Exactly. They have more of a clear idea of what they want to do, of what they should be doing at all times. And that's a lot of kind of like shot calling, right? And kind of experience and having a better feel or a better read on where you are. But I agree. I think the CLG example was good, because I think it's a lot. It's most common with low ranked teams that you see them in this winning spot and they're just not doing anything with it. And it's like, bro, you're like 8K up. You could just win the game. Like, just go take any fight and you will win, right? And I think that is where it would make the biggest difference. As far as like, if it would really be played differently, I don't think much would change other than teams maybe playing more aggressive or more confident when they're ahead.
See, this is why I have a different take from you guys. I feel like it's mostly on counting items rather than knowing gold differences in game. And so it doesn't actually change that much for a lot of pro players, because you're always pressing tab and looking at items and mm-hmm. and talking about how it feels in the fights. And so you have a good idea of what you're capable of and what their champs are capable of. And it might actually conflate the issue if you did constantly have the overall total gold plastered in front of your face and take your attention away from what you should be doing, which, to be fair, it honestly actually biased viewers a little bit too much towards the gold difference, because there are a lot of places where, oh, they haven't even bought yet, and the items in inventory don't represent the gold difference values. And so pro players will take that fight because of cooldowns that have been used, items that are in inventory. Those are the like important calculations that you make. So maybe you get some leeway for like, oh, the lower ranked teams or the ones that have confidence issues,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But if you're at that point, I'm like, man, yeah.
I think it would be interesting, because it hasn't been a thing. Like, you never hear people be like, well, we're 2K up at 15, we can force this dragon. I wonder if people started communicating more that way if they knew. Because right now, like you're saying, you're like, I got this power spike, I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's largely the most important thing is where you at comparatively. But sometimes you might say, in preparation for this dragon, we're down 2K, let's not fight it. And right now they can't really do that. They have to kind of like look at all the things. It could be a shortcut in some areas, mm-hmm. but it's hard to know exactly how pro players would start using it.
Yeah. And I mean, how coaches could use it, right?
Yeah.
Because you could dictate to the team, hey, if you're X up, take the fight. If you're X down, don't take the fight. It's like a very easy way to like almost mm-hmm. like pilot your team in a predetermined way.
Peter Dunn, I forget where he said this. It might have been a Hotline League, it might have been somewhere else, but he was like, this is the one thing he told Jizuke was, I want you to play your way every single time, no matter if you're ahead or behind or whatever, except when you're more than 3,000 gold ahead of your opponent. Then I want you to play like Jensen.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Because then just playing safe and doing damage, you just win.
Yeah. This is especially like in the earlier part of the season, yeah. But it was and, really funny.
And so I'd say that basically translates to, if you're an item up, go to town. and that's what I feel like things should be communicated as.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my real point, is that I think things should more often be communicated as what you're holding and what your item advantage is instead of...
I agree in general. I do think it's sometimes complicated by like some of the builds where people take like a lot of shortcuts away from mythics. Like PoE, for example, I know some people were kind of flaming him and stuff for like his build.
All the pieces.
Yeah, all the pieces, right? But it's like he spent like 2,500 gold. He doesn't have close to an item, you know? Or like top lane ones that people are more on board with, Tabby's Bramble, right? You don't have an item, but you could be like a similar...
It's a half item, bro.
You could be a similar amount of gold or even ahead without completed items in some cases. So I do think it's just like... would be another little barometer.
I think it could be again, a shorthand in some cases.
Yeah.
I honestly even would use things like half item and, you know, stuff like that. Because like a serrated dirk does mean a lot for an assassin. You know, Bramble Vest does.
Yeah.
It's a cool question.
Yeah,
it's fun to think about. And it would be interesting to see if it would change things up. And that's going to wrap it up for us for now. Thank you, Honda, for this episode of The Dive. And remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button on youtube.com/LCS. Check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and keep sending us the questions on Twitter. Use the hashtag TheDiveLOL. I'm surprised every week how many questions I get on how to send us questions, but maybe people tune out as soon as I start saying this stuff.
We got to move it to the top of the show.
We got one this week where someone was like, how do I send in a question? He tagged all of us and put in, do I just use hashtag the dive lol? I'm like, it's as easy as that. 1, 2, 3. You got it.
Finally, make sure to give us your takes on anchor.fm. We might react to it here on the dive. Third round of the LCS playoffs kicks off this Thursday. C9, EG, 3 p.m. PST. Three of these lower bracket teams will be going home after this weekend. So make sure to bring the fight to every one of these matchups. We'll see you then.
Somebody's going to be crying. Somebody's favorite team's gotten kicked out.
Not
the playoffs.
That's true.
Not the league.